You want them to do something for you, to choose you without being asked, because you believe that if you have to ask, it doesn't really count. You want a partner who puts their work down first, the parent who calls to see how you're doing, the friend who reaches out for no reason. When they don't, something in you decides it means there's something wrong with you, and you add it to a growing list of evidence that you're an afterthought. But wanting to be chosen is a real psychological need, not just neediness. The problem isn't the wanting. It's a belief you're probably carrying about what asking means. Today, we'll name the five things you actually need to feel safe and seen in a close relationship, the belief that's quietly eroding yours, and a three-step process I call the three A's for getting out of the trap. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Relationships Made Easy podcast, where I give you the exact steps to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships, whether it's with your partner, your family, your friends, or most importantly, yourself. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, psychologist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and the bossy Jewish mom you didn't know you needed. Each week, you'll get no-nonsense, research-backed strategies served with humor and love, so you can stop second-guessing yourself and start having the relationships you deserve. You'll always leave knowing exactly what to say and do to shift your relationships for the better. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the Relationships Made Easy podcast. You know who I am, your host, Dr. Abby Metcalf. And wow, this is, I really enjoy the topics I bring to you because there are things that come up. And this was originally talked about a woman in my Substack community, the One Love Collective online. She was talking about something around this topic, and I hear it way too often with my private clients. And I don't know, something in the way she said it made me go, oh my gosh, I really should do an episode on this. You know, so she's someone, for example, who loves her partner. She's been with him for quite a bit now. There's nothing obviously wrong, but underneath it all, she feels, I don't know how to say it, like chronically secondary. That's how she feels. When she tries to name what that's like, it sounds like, you know, he chooses other things first, you know, projects, work, his soccer team, the kids, family obligations, whatever. And when she wants more of him, what's happened is she stops herself from asking because she tells herself that if she has to ask, it won't really count. So she stays quiet. She watches, you know, she's collecting the data, and somewhere in the silence, she starts wondering whether, you know, she's with the wrong person, whether her needs are too much, whether maybe she's the problem, that kind of thing. And if you've heard a version maybe of yourself and what everything I just said, again, you are far from alone. And what's going on, it's really more layered than it looks. There's a fundamental need underneath her question, maybe your question, that's not neediness at all. There's a belief she's carrying that's quietly, it's really sabotaging the very thing she's reaching for, and probably that you are. And there's a process for actually finding out whether the relationship can give her what you need, or whether you've been protecting yourself from an answer you're not ready to hear. Okay. So let's walk through it. Okay, I think I've told you before that when I'm writing something like this up, I write down the questions you all ask me, and that's usually how I do it, or the, you know, kind of the main themes. And so, is feeling like an afterthought really that big a deal? Is probably the first place I want to go, right? And the short answer, of course, is yes. But here's the clinical grounding for why. Because I want you to stop treating this like you're making a mountain out of a molehill kind of thing, because that's what I hear. There's a sociologist, Morris Rosenberg, and he introduced a concept really decades ago called mattering, which is it's described as the felt sense that you're significant to another person. That's what mattering is, that they notice you, that they'd feel your absence, that they care what happens to you. And since then, and I'll link to his research, but since then, there's really been a substantial body of research showing that mattering is a distinct psychological need, not a preference, not a personality trait. And when it's chronically low, the consequences are specific and they're measurable. So chronic low mattering, that's what how we would say that, you know, chronically feeling like you don't matter to someone specific or the people that are really important. Chronic low mattering independently on its own predicts depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, and relationship withdrawal, like relational withdrawal, withdrawing from a relationship, even when they control for things like self-esteem, social support, and other variables. So I want to give that to you in plain language. It means that feeling like you don't matter to the people closest to you is not a small thing your nervous system should be able to override. It's a legitimate psychological injury. And that's why it's feeling big. And this is why the answer to, again, is this really a big deal if everything else is fine? That's why the answer is yes. Mattering, it's not just one ingredient in a good relationship. It's one of the foundations. It's foundational in your relationship. You can have a partner who's kind, reliable, you know, good on paper. And if you chronically feel like the afterthought, your nervous system will register the relationship as unsafe, regardless of how the rest of it looks. You're not asking for too much, and you're not inventing something out of nothing. You're asking for something the research actually supports as necessary. Okay, so let's get into it. So there's five things you need to feel safe and seen in a close relationship, you know? So, because relationships that work, they're not magic and they're not about, they're really not about compatibility in the way you might think. They're about whether certain specific needs are getting met reliably, okay? And so these are the five that I look for in my practice when I'm trying to figure out whether a close relationship is working. Okay, so, you know, if someone's coming to me with something and I'm trying to feather out, is this codependency? Is it enmeshment? Is it neediness? Is it what is it? You know, is it anxious attachment? Like, what am I looking at here? And I want to say that these five apply to romantic partners, parents, adult children, siblings, close friends, any bond where you need to feel held, this is it. Okay, so number one, and this is from the research too, but these are the things that there's a lot more in the research, and you know, I'm going to give you my top five. I'm making a lot of noise. My audio person's going to help. I'm not supposed to wear jewelry that clanks when I do these, and I'm wearing some clanky jewelry. If you see me, come on over to YouTube, see what I'm wearing. I got some clanky jewelry on. Okay, so the five. Number one is felt safety. Okay, so felt safety. I want to talk about that. So not just the absence of danger, it's the felt embodied sense that this person is safe for you to be yourself around. Your nervous system relaxes when, you know, you walk in the door. You don't have to edit, brace, perform, nothing. Without this one, by the way, nothing else can function because your system can't take in connection while it's scanning for threat. So I call it the big exhale. You know, if you walk in your front door at the end of the, it's a long day. You walk in your front door and it's like, whew, you can really fully exhale. I'm home safe. You close that door behind you. If you can do that, you got this one in the bag. Okay. But that's the feeling you should have. It shouldn't be like, oh, my partner's, you know, if I drive up and I see Gary's car, you know, I have an exhale moment. I'm like, oh, Gary's home. You know, like there's a nice feeling there. There's a felt sense, right, of some safety. Or if I see him, maybe if I come into a party later than him or, you know, some social event later and I see him and there's like an ah kind of moment, right? So it shouldn't be everything, but it should be something. Okay. So it's sort of be there. So something like that. What I don't want is for you to walk in your house, see their car in the driveway and be like, oh God, here we go. That's not a good feeling. All right. Number two is accessibility. So they're reachable when you need them. Physically when possible, emotionally always. And this doesn't mean they drop everything every time. It means the door is open and you trust that you can knock on that door. There's a psychologist I've mentioned before here on the podcast, Sue Johnson, and she's done a lot of research on emotionally focused therapy. And in EFT, emotionally focused therapy, they identify this as one of the three pillars of secure adult relationships. And she talks about this acronym ARE. Accessibility is the A. Okay. And again, if you're calling your partner seven times a day at work, that there's a problem. I mean, just on a regular Tuesday, right? If you're calling them because your mom just died and you just found out and you need to talk to them more than once in the day, or if they maybe even don't just say, you know what, let me wrap up some things here. Let me get out of here and I'll come to you. You know what I mean? But that's how you sort of know the difference. If you're somebody who needs them to constantly be in contact with you, that's something different. That's the insecurity, that's enmeshment, that's other stuff. But I'm saying, like, when you are in that other place, and it doesn't have to be as drastic as a mother dying, but it should be more than like, you know, I just feel like I need to have constant contact with them. That, again, that's a little different. Okay. So ARE, accessibility is the A. Responsiveness, when you reach is the third one, okay? When you reach, they respond. They turn towards you, not away. And this is, of course, John Gottman's research on, you know, couples, right? And Gottman's have spent decades tracking these sort of tiny moments of reaching and responding. Okay, he calls them bids for connection. I've done an episode on bids. Bids are huge. And we know from the you can go listen to that. I think it's an important one. We know that couples who consistently turn toward each other's bids, we know that they stay together. Couples who turn away or turn against it, like, oh, I can't believe you're asking me this, or why are you bothering me kind of stuff, they don't. And so this is the R in the ARE, and it's measurable in very small interactions. The text returned or not, the questions asked or not, the hand reached for or not, that kind of stuff. And then number four is engagement. That's the ARE part of this, right? They're curious about you, your inner life, your day, the thing you're wrestling with. They ask and they actually want the answer. They want the answer. They're not just coexisting with you. Okay. And it's what really, I think, separates a relationship that feels sort of alive from one that feels like roommates. Okay. And then number five is the mattering, which we just talked about. This is the, of course, kind of like the through line for the other four that I just said. Their behavior over time, it consistently tells you that you're important to them. You see it in what they prioritize, what they remember, what they protect. You don't have to ask for proof. The proof is in the pattern. And this is really the need the woman in my Substack community I was talking about was really asking about. Not whether her husband loves her. I think she feels love. Whether she matters enough to show up and how he spends his time. That's really it. So if you're listening right now, you know, if you're sitting with this list and noticing that several are missing in one of your close relationships, might not be your partner, might be a best friend, I want you to not get upset, don't freak out, but you're getting useful information. Okay, this is useful information. And if mattering specifically feels chronically absent, okay, then let's buckle up. Okay, let's get to the rest of this. All right. So I want to talk now about why, if I have to ask, it doesn't count, you know, that thing, why that works like a trap. Because this is where the belief comes in. When you're carrying the legitimate need to feel like you matter and you're not getting clear evidence, there are basically two things you can do. You can ask for what you need directly, or of course, you can stay silent and watch for proof, right? For most of us, when the stakes are highest, sadly, we pick silence. And the reason silence wins is that it sounds protective. If I have to ask, it doesn't count. It sounds like almost like high standards. It sounds like you know your worth. It sounds maybe like integrity. And yeah, there's a grain of truth in there because yes, unprompted attention is also real information, but underneath, this belief is a protection strategy. It protects you from the risk of asking and being disappointed. Because if you never ask, you never hear the no. It protects you from the vulnerability of naming what you need. Because once it's named, their response or lack of it, I guess, becomes in your head sort of like verdict level information. And so it's protecting you from the possibility that you matter less than you hoped, right? Because as long as the ask stays silent, you can tell yourself they just don't know. Once you ask, but nothing changes, let's face it, you're forced to look at what the pattern is actually telling you. So you stay silent. You hope, you watch, and when the silence doesn't produce the thing, right, whatever the thing is, you're logging it as one more piece of evidence that you're not important enough. And that data piles up and then the distance grows and all of it happens without a word being said, which is obviously a big problem. So again, I want to be clear that this isn't kind of only an insecurity thing. Because securely attached people, they'll run this belief too, because, you know, it's cultural, it's big. We romanticize, sadly, mind reading. We glorify partners who, you know, just know. You should know what I want for my birthday. You know, we've been together this many years. You should know that that would hurt my feelings. You know, we glorify that they should just know. We treat asking for things like affection is somehow less valid than unprompted affection, you know, and none of that is accurate, but it's in the water, right? And that said, if you lean anxious in your attachment style, this belief will grip you harder. Okay, I'm going to say that because your system is already wired to scan for signs you're about to be dropped or overlooked, right? So asking feels like exposing the wound. And so you test it instead. So I will say it's a little harder if you're an anxious person. But again, securely attached people get in this trouble too. Okay. So I got to get my hair out of my way. It's like bugging me. Okay. So what's actually happening? The silent test. Let's talk about it. Let me gather my thoughts. So when you stop asking and start watching, what you've actually done is set up, again, what I call kind of a silent test. And the silent test is when you put an unspoken bar in place for someone close to you, you know, again, a partner, parent, sibling, friend, and you wait to see whether they clear it on their own. And if they do, you feel loved. If they don't, you feel kind of confirmed in this worst fear. Either way, they never knew there was a test. And the bar is almost always tied to the specific thing you are scared of. You know, scared you're an afterthought. The test is, did they think of me without being prompted? Scared you're a burden. Did they offer before I had to ask? Did they offer some sort of help before I had to ask? Scared you're forgettable. Did they reach for me first? Scared they don't find you attractive. Did they compliment me today? Right? Do you see? I know. I see you. You're sitting there right now going, damn, Abby, are you in my house? I'm not in your house. I could be though, huh? Yeah, because I've been doing this 40 years and I talk to a lot of you. It's very common. The silent test fails constantly because you designed it to be failable. You did. Your partner has their own preoccupations. Your mom isn't wired to call you the way you wish she would. Your friend is in her own needs, right? They aren't mind readers. And many of them are also running their their own version of this exact belief on you, which is why so many relationships end up with two people who both feel chronically unseen and neither one has said a friggin' word. And I know because I meet with the couples and I talk to both of them and they each have the exact same complaint. Exact same complaint. It's needless to say, it's a little crazy making. And I'm writing down something I want to remember to send. Okay, sorry. So I want to remember to say something else. So I just wrote it down. Now, here's the seductive part. The seductive part is that if they occasionally pass, you briefly feel it, right? You got proof. There's confirmation that you matter. But the proof expires fast, doesn't it? And the next week, you need another test. It's a system that can never deliver what you're really hungry for, because what you're actually hungry for is the durable, felt sense of mattering. And no one-off test can give you that. That's the problem. Okay, so let's get to my three A's. I have three A's. The way out of the silent test is a three-step process I call the three A's. All right. Step one is the ask. Okay, ask. That's the first A. Break the silence. Say the thing out loud, clearly and specifically. Not a hint. Not I wish we spent more time together. Some vague crap that nobody, what the hell does that even mean? You want to have something that could actually land and be responded to. Because if you say, I wish we spent more time together, your partner's like, we spent plenty of time together. Like they're not even, because to them, maybe it's plenty. So, or we just watched TV together last night, but you're asking for something else. You got to be more specific. And before you leave next weekend, I want a full day with you, just us, no work.
I've always made every episode of this podcast with one idea in mind, to over-deliver. I want you to walk away thinking, I would have paid for that. I can't believe it's free. And in all the years I've done this show, as you know, I have never taken on a sponsor. But when Quince asked to be my very first, I said an enthusiastic yes, because Quince does exactly what I do. They over-deliver. Cashmere without cashmere prices, real washable silk, all the elevated stuff you and I love without the markup we all hate. And I'm talking 50 to 80% less than you can find anywhere else. And I'll just say it, I love an obvious bargain. I live just outside San Francisco where the summers are more of a rumor than a season, so I wear their cashmere sweaters year-round. But there's way more than cashmere, of course. So make your summer wardrobe feel easier. Go to quince.com/RME for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/RME, which stands for Relationships Made Easy, for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/RME.
See that? To your mom, I'd love it if you called me sometimes without a reason. And I wouldn't even say sometimes. I'd love it if this week at some point you called me and without a reason, just a call. To a friend. I notice I'm usually the one reaching out. I'd like that to go both ways. How do you think we can get there? What do you think? Specific, honest, undeniable. That's what we're going for. The reason specificity matters is that vague asks, those really vague, more time together, we're not close enough, I don't know, whatever that is, they keep the silent test very alive. If you say, I just want to feel close to you, you've left yourself room to judge their response as insufficient no matter what they do. A specific ask really closes that door and the back door, the place out, and gives them a real target. And it gives you a real answer, which is what we want. Okay, so that was step one, is to ask. Step two is allow. Once you've asked, don't contaminate the response. This is the step I think most people skip. If he says, yes, let's do that, and then he does it, you got to let it land. You have to resist the voice that says, but he only did it because I asked. That voice is the silent test still running in the background, trying to disqualify the evidence because the evidence threatens that protective belief we talked about, right? So the reframe I want you to practice is this: asking did not contaminate the answer. Asking gave them the information they needed to show up because they already thought they were. Their willingness to show up once they had the information is the real data. Discounting that because you had to speak the words is how you stay trapped and you trap them. If asking makes it not count, then no behavior they ever produce will count because on some level, you'll always know you influenced it, right? And that's the like partners, parents, and friends, we influence each other because that's what a close relationship is. So if that's your only metric, we're in trouble. Pretending otherwise isn't high standards. It's a setup for permanent dissatisfaction. Permanent dissatisfaction. And I'm just going to say with love, this is where mindfulness is non-negotiable, right? I know every episode, God damn it, Abby. Yeah, I don't care. Sorry, not sorry. Right? I'm going to talk about mindfulness. You need a real step here. Allow step takes real practice because you're being asked. I'm asking you to notice the disqualifying voice in your head and not automatically believe it. And that's mindfulness. That's being in your moment, non-judgmentally, and noticing what happens. And if you haven't gotten my free mindfulness starter kit yet, what the hell are you waiting for? Let's get this going. Okay. So ask, allow, steps 1 and 2. And step 3 of the A's is to assess. So now watch what happens over time. Not one ask, 1 week, one data point. Okay. Don't give me that. I mean a pattern. After you've asked clearly, does the behavior shift? Does it stay shifted or revert the moment you stop reminding? When you name a recurring dynamic, does this person get curious and meet you in it? Or do they get defensive and hand it back to you as your problem? Do their bids start coming towards you? Or does it all stay on your side of making bids, right? What happens? And this takes time. I think a minimum, people always ask, it's definitely several weeks. I'd say a couple months. And often longer for family, long-standing friendships, long-term relation, you know, romantic partners. You're looking for a trend line, not a single data point. And what you're really doing is separating a silent problem from a spoken one because those are not the same thing and they call for completely different decisions. Okay. All right. Those are my 3 A's. So how do you know when it's fixable and when it's the answer? So, and this is, I know, the part nobody wants to look at directly, but it's the part that actually I think matters the most, right? When you run the 3 A's, what you're doing is generating the information you need to answer 3 different questions, depending on what the pattern shows, right? Pattern 1 is it shifts and stays shifted. That can be one of the options. Your partner didn't know what you needed. They heard you and they adjusted. Your friend started reaching back. Your sibling began initiating hanging out. You know, that's a fixable pattern in a remarkable amount. You'd be surprised of long-term relational suffering. I will tell you, falls into this category from my experience. It does. So nobody's a bad person. The silence itself was the problem and the voice fixed it, right? Okay. Pattern 2. It shifts intermittently or it needs re-asking. And that's really common. The behavior changes maybe for 2 weeks and slides back, right? Sure, you've been there. You ask again and it shifts again. That's also information, but it's not a verdict yet. And I know you're like, oh, I had to ask again. That's it. It may mean the change is genuinely hard for the other person and they need more support building the habit. They haven't been doing it that long. It may mean you need to ask more directly with more stakes named, right? To really understand how important this is to you. To me, this is still the repair zone. And my biggest suggestion here is to ask questions. When you notice things sliding back or whatever happened, right? Can you tell me more about what happens for you when I make a request? Where does your thinking go? How do you feel? Is there a way we can work together on this to create some relationship habits that work for both of us? Do you see this? There's a lot of questions you can ask here instead of feeling hurt and deciding what it means. Stop assigning a verdict so quickly, okay? I know that keeps you safe. That's why you want to do it, but it's not helpful. Think of the time. How many times have you tried to stop eating sugar or gone on a diet or tried to work out? Or think of something else that you've tried to do or wake up earlier or go to bed on time. And if you've ever, and it doesn't mean you didn't want those things. It doesn't mean you didn't want to like have a cute butt by the summer, right? It doesn't mean you didn't want to feel healthier and have more energy. It doesn't mean any of that. The fact that you didn't wake up early, go to bed on time, stop eating sugar, whatever, eat 3 meals a day, drink more water. It doesn't mean anything. It means that new habits are difficult and they take some time to put into place. It takes support. It takes a lot of focus and our lives get really busy. And the next thing you know, right, you're up late because you couldn't sleep and then you don't want to wake up early the next day and then you eat a crappy breakfast and then, right, and you didn't go work out and because you don't feel good and blah, blah, blah. Life happens. Why do we not have the same openness, compassion, whatever the words are, for our partners or our parents or our siblings or our friends when it comes to these things? We tend to assign really sinister motives. And I can tell you again, I say especially with like your partner, they're usually trying to please you. They usually don't want to piss you off. That's the last thing on their list. The problem is we've had some miscommunication about what we're doing and what you need or want. A lot of times, again, naming the stakes really helps because they don't understand. I was thinking of even, I think I've shared this before. I was asking like, and this isn't the same thing, but you get the idea. I was asking Gary to put a lock. We have a, from the garage to the house, there's a door, right? And I was asking him to put a lock on that. It wasn't locked because I'm the crazy New Yorker who, and a female, and I feel unsafe a lot, you know, sometimes physically. And I'm a little nutty with locking things up. He is a 6'4" white male, you know, not as worried in the world about his safety, physical safety, right? Very fit, blah, blah, blah. So we walk through the world in very different ways. So when I asked him to put this lock on the door, he's like, sure, but he didn't do it. And I kept waiting and I was getting madder and madder, you know, my needs don't matter. I'm asking, blah, blah, blah. And finally I got kind of snippy because I didn't do this well. I'm not perfect either. And basically he said to me, oh, wait a minute. Like he didn't realize how important it, because to him, it wasn't that important. So even though I was asking, I had a few things on the honey-do list, okay? I had a few things I was asking for. And, you know, around the house, there's always things to fix and do and mow and trim and whatever, right? There's always stuff, you know, hanging the pictures or whatever. And so he didn't realize that to me, this was like a DEFCON 1, not like a 5. I don't know which way the DEFCON goes. So you get me, an importance of, you know, a high importance, you know, to him, it was a low importance. He didn't, because we have, you know, the garage is locked. There's a door outside the garage that stays locked. You know, there's alarms, there's things. To him, this was pretty low on the totem pole. Whereas to me, it was really important. So sometimes you have to really let people know the stakes. You have to let them know how important something is to you. This, not a threat, not, you know, I didn't say, well, I'm leaving you if you don't fix the, right? But we use that number system and it really helps a lot. And he said, oh my God, what is this? Is this like a 5? He didn't realize where it was on, you know, my importance level. It was, oh my God, this is a 1. I didn't know, whatever. So, that's why it's good to check. Just because it's important to you and you've said that it's important doesn't mean your partner, your mom, whoever is registering it the same way. And trust me, you do this too. People ask you things all the time and you don't register as important as they do. You rationalize it in your head or whatever. It happens. So anyway, okay. The third pattern, so we have, you know, they do it, they stick to it. The second pattern is they're intermittent with it. And this third pattern, of course, is that it doesn't shift at all. You ask, they hear you, they agree. And then, you know, next weekend and the one after that, they go where they go and it isn't toward you, right? And in that case, the pattern itself is the answer, okay? What you needed was to run the three A's so you could tell the difference between a silent problem and a spoken one, because those, right, call for completely different responses. So I want to say that. And here's where I need to get specific, because what you do with a pattern three outcome depends enormously on the relationship. So with a close friend or, you know, a sibling who can't or won't meet a need, you might cut off the relationship. You might not. You usually, though, you renegotiate what it is. You stop handing that person the piece of you they can't hold, and you source that need somewhere else. So that relationship is going to become smaller, right? But it becomes true. It becomes more real, more authentic. You're no longer punishing them for failing a test they couldn't pass, and you're no longer building resentment because you've put a different parameter around who they are. With a parent, same logic, kind of, you know, maybe even more carefully. I would say that even very few parent relationships get cut entirely. That's more of a trend these days, you know, parental estrangement. But for most people, that's not the goal. What changes is what you bring to them. If your mother can't do curiosity about your inner life, you stop asking her to. You stop hoping she'll remember to call. You get your mattering needs met by the people who can meet them, and you let her be who she is within whatever boundaries keep you okay, right? Grieving what a parent can't give you, I would say, is one of the harder adult tasks. I've been there, I know. But it's kinder than spending another 20 years running a silent test that woman is never going to pass, okay? It is. And you know, I've talked about my relationship with my mama on here many, many times, and her narcissism and what I wanted and all the things that I couldn't get. I tried in different ways. And, you know, again, you can cut people off. For me, I just stopped giving her ammunition. I stopped giving her a lot of parts of my life. And I started, you know, really having very clear, very thicker boundaries with this person and not having expectations of her as the kind of moms, you know, I see on TV or something. It just never was going to be that. But I did find a place to have peace with her and to love her and to accept, because I wanted my mom in my life. You know, that's a choice I made. But if I'm making that choice, I want to be happy about it. I want to be at peace, not happy. I hate that word, but I want to be at peace with it. And I found peace. I thought for 20 years, I was never going to find that. And I did. So, and it's a good feeling. But, and that you have to go, you know, read the Boundaries Made Easy book or get the workbook, or that's all about your boundaries. But anyway, and with a romantic partner, I think this is where this pattern gets most complicated, because sometimes it means the relationship doesn't work and you've given yourself the information you needed to eventually leave with integrity. I'm just going to say it, but not always. You know, a lot of people decide to stay in a relationship where a specific need isn't being fully met, and they make that choice consciously, though, not passively. They get their mattering needs met, you know, across a wider network, their close friends, their community, church, synagogue, mosque, family of choice, meaningful work. There's lots of places, right, you can get that met. And there's, you know, there's historical weight behind this, the idea that one person, romantic or otherwise, should meet every psychological need, I need to tell you, is a very modern expectation and not one I don't think any one human was ever built to carry. Okay. I really don't. I think it's a little crazy. What the three A's give you, I hope, is the clarity to decide how you want to structure your mattering. How you want to structure your mattering, rather than leaving it to default and then feeling wounded and hurt every time the default fails, right? There's a common thread here. You can't know what category you're in until you've actually asked. As long as the test stays silent, you're going to be trapped in a story you built in your own dark room. And asking is what makes the choice yours. Okay, so let's wrap it up. I have a great free download for today, an amazing Therapy to Go bundle, but let me just say this first. Feeling like an afterthought to the people you love isn't neediness. It isn't insecurity always, and it isn't you being too much. It's the felt absence of mattering, which is a real psychological need. It deserves a real response, okay? When what's breaking down isn't the wanting, it's the silence, the belief that naming the want will ruin it as a protection strategy that was probably useful to you at some point in your life. And it's now actively making the thing you fear more likely, believe it or not. So here's what I'd like you to try this week. Pick one silent test you've been running on someone close to you. Just one. Name it to yourself first. What's the unspoken bar you've been watching them fail? Then run the three A's. Ask specifically, allow the response without disqualifying it, give time to assess the pattern, let the information be information, not a verdict, right? And you may find the person is more willing than you thought. You may find that. You may find they're not. Either way, you'll have real information you can actually use, and you'll have taken your mattering out of someone else's unspoken hands and put it back into your own. And that's what we're talking about. Okay. And I'm happy with the free download I created for today. It's like a self-assessment, which walks you through spotting your own silent tests and running the three A's step by step. So it's kind of like if you're sitting here right now going, I'm not sure what my silent tests are. I know I have them. I'm not sure. Then the free download is for you. And if you want to go deeper, if this is an area where you're like, holy crap, Abby, this has been me the whole episode, my Therapy to Go bundle for this episode has a lot of tools to help you break that silent test pattern for good and, you know, start building the mattering you actually need, right? Okay, so it's $10. It's just $10, and you will get the following. You get the free download included if you don't want to download things twice. But then I have a bunch in here. I've got the mattering audit. It's kind of like a bird's eye view of where you feel chosen and where you don't, okay? There's the silent test decoder worksheet. It's really how to spot the tests you've been running and turn it into a clear ask. Journaling prompts, of course, for the beliefs that keep you silent so you can stop doing this in all your relationship. There's the three A's in action. So I've got like scripts, reframes, and a tracker for the ask, allow, assess. And a really important, I think, the last part is when the pattern won't shift. It's a decision support tool for what to do next. So I think that's can be a really important part of this bundle so that you have, if you're not getting what you need at some point, you have something to help you work through the decisions. And as I always mention, anything I talk about today on the podcast, any research, any past episodes, the free meditation mindfulness starter kit, I have a free meditation starter kit too. All the bundle, all the things you can find below the video if you're watching on YouTube. If you are watching on YouTube, like and subscribe, please, or leave a comment. That would be great. Or you can find them on the website, abbymetcalf.com. Just scroll on down to this episode and you'll find all the goodies. So that is it for today. I hope this was helpful. You deserve to matter. You deserve to be chosen. I choose you. I'm glad you chose me. You're choosing me by listening and watching and interacting and all that, which I love, love, love. And don't let fear run your next decisions. Do the three A's. Follow through. Don't be so afraid of what the outcome might be. Number one, it might be something great. But number two, no matter what, you're getting information that you can then deal with. Nothing means you need to leave a relationship and nothing means you need to stay. Everything is just information that you can decide what to do next with. Okay. All right. Mwah. I love you so much. Have an amazing week and we'll talk real soon. Thank you for spending time with me today. If you're loving what you're learning here, come join my One Love Collective. It's my private community where we take these conversations even deeper. You'll get a ton of bonus content, live Q&As with me, guided visualizations, journaling prompts, scripts, and an incredible community of like-minded people ready to support you as you create more ease and joy in all your relationships. It's all waiting for you at abbymetcalf.com or right on Substack. I'll see you next week.